You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Red Sox head of the World Series.
Dude, you're garbled. That music just like screwed up everything.
What music? Which music?
Like your lead up, whatever you're playing.
Whatever. That's you. That ain't me. So you're garbled, not me. Mine, it's crystal clear. So you got issues on your end.
Well, what up? Listening to you, then everybody else is listening to you. That's,
no, but everybody hears it. It's kind of an interesting thing. Everybody, like your stuff.
I heard it.
Oh, here we go.
I heard, like I said, your 1970s ESPN lead-up, you know, music.
That was
like sports.
That was ESPN's.
From 1977, like when they first came out.
No, it's their hockey night stuff. So
they need to change it. That shit was boring.
I like it better than their baseball stuff. The so big win last night. The Red Sox were not supposed to win last night.
What? I didn't see that.
Yeah, no. Justin Verlander was supposed to send it back to Boston, and a guy who's never a guy who's never won in the postseason. It continues.
Price.
David he and look,
dude, they were all over Verlander last night. I mean, he was like he was telegraphing all of those home run pitches.
I don't think so. He didn't have it though. And David Price was like Cy Young last night. And then
he was Magic Man.
And then once again, another guy hitting seventh, eighth, or ninth hits another 3-run home run. You're like, oh my god.
JBJ got the MVP though for the series.
Devers hit the home run last night. He hadn't had a home run the whole
game. But nine RBIs, two home runs.
From a guy hitting like seventh last night. So it continues. Red Sox magical run.
Again, my prediction with Drew Benatelli, man, that guy is something else. He is something else.
Why? What did he do last night?
It was just some of his defensive plays, man. I mean, he's just one of those guys. He's just very talented baseball player.
Yeah. No, they have three of them in the outfield. Bradley, the guy who the MVP, as Mike and I were talking, he hasn't hit the whole year. I mean,
he's like a 117 hitter.
Yeah,
he
struggled. But he defensively, he can go get him. And they showed again last night. I mean, the play wasn't like the game before, but it was pretty similar. Mookie Betts goes and gets a ball, and they just don't give you extra outs. And at this time of year, when you start giving, and I'll tell you what, talk about giving extra outs, Justin Verlander, right, the pitch before J.D. Martinez hit a home run, he threw him a perfect slider. There was a strike that got called a ball, and the next pitch went over the left field fence. So extra chances are huge in the playoffs, and if you give teams more than three outs an inning, you lose. You wind up losing. And the Red Sox don't do that.
Red Sox played great ball last night.
Well, let me just tell you, their infield defense is, especially around third base,
is outstanding.
Is not very good. All right?
No, it's outstanding.
No. Nunez was horrible. And Devers is the reason he's not playing is his defense. Okay. Their outfield is good. Their shortstop is good. Second base is good. And their first base, especially when Moreland's there, he's a gold glove guy. So, and their catchers are good. So the Red Sox defensively, pretty tight except for third base, and you have to be because you pay the price if you're not. So did you do your happy dance last night? It wasn't a close game.
No, I didn't do the happy dance. It's not over with yet, though.
It wasn't like the night before when it was nerve-wracking.
No, it was nerve-wracking. It was eating chalk tablets just to keep the acid down in my stomach.
Come on, really? Are you like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was getting hiccups, everything. I was like, oh, drinking water, eating crackers. I was like, oh, come on. This is crazy. And then the Dodgers lead the – I mean, they could wrap it up. They're playing tonight too, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they play, at 5 o'clock Pacific
late
time?
Tonight.
Yeah, so they late. Play the night. They play the night game, 8 o'clock Eastern time. You know, that's why East Coast baseball this time of year sucks, man. If you want to watch, you're up after midnight because these games don't end in less than 4 hours.
Oh, I know.
So,
but you know what?
East Coast.
The people at the home will the ushers at the home will let you stay up and watch it. I guarantee.
But if you're on the West Coast, it's all good. It's all good. Game starts at 5.
The price, though, man. He was something else. I mean, if any game he needed to be his best last night.
Oh,
Mr. Price, you were phenomenal.
Well, you know what, and it's and you're watching him, and he's been such a good pitcher for such a long time in the big leagues. And when you see guys like that, never won in a playoff game. You see Charles Barkley, you know, who does the NBA stuff. He was a great player for almost 20 years in the NBA, never won a championship. And then you hear guys say, well, you know, that shouldn't define your career. But for guys that are great players, it does a little bit. You see David Price, 0-9 or 0-10, coming into the playoffs this year, and then got rocked by the Yankees in that series. And then so seeing him pitch well last night, you know, you think, God bless him. Good for him.
Yeah, right.
Good for him. Let me tell you, I'm a Red Sox hater. I hate the organization. I don't hate – this team has a lot of guys that are easy.
They deserve to be there.
Well, I don't give a crap about that. They're easy to root for. Mookie Betts, dad's a Vietnam veteran, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever you watch him get interviewed, seems like a great guy, very humble. J.D. Martinez almost was out of baseball and resurrected his career. Another humble, kind of hot, quiet, hardworking guy. And I like Alex Cora, the manager. Whenever you see him interviewed, he's always very smart. He's very affable. Handles himself always well.
Their manager is a lot better. I like the personality.
Yeah, they're hard. They're difficult to hate, even for a Red Sox hater.
I just miss Big Poppy though.
I don't. He needs to shut his yap. He talks to that guy made
like
it.
He's a Big Poppy man.
That guy made it easy to hate them. Right.
No, Poppy was a nice guy.
No, he wasn't. He's a steroid user, man.
What? Where is that? Are we being a liberal today? We're just making an allegation with no findings of facts?
Can't be. We like him. Yeah, he's
our guy. There we go. Our liberalism comes out. Just going to make an allegation.
There you go.
I'm just going to call you Christine Blasey Ford from now on.
Let's not go there.
What's up, Christine?
Let's not go there. Email. Hold on. It's about the World Series. So, Mac, I'm thinking your World Series experience was not the most pleasant one. No. No, I mean, you hear Mike, he's talking about taking that acid tablets. Can you imagine sitting there, like, as a family member, watching it with your stomach in a knot for 4 hours? It's horrible. And then tend to have something happen, like what happened to the Red Sox in 1986?
Yeah. Oh.
No, honestly, it's absolutely horrible. Horrible. After game 7, when they actually lost, I was with my dad, and we were walking across the field at Shea Stadium out to the Red Sox bus. For whatever reason, was parked on the warning track in right field at Shea Stadium. Somebody throws a beer out of the upper deck, a beer in a can, and hits the traveling secretary, who might be 15 feet in front of me, right on top of the head with a beer that was probably 2/3 full from the upper deck. It hits him, and it blows his head open. And these baseball players, they're like, everybody, like, runs, like, away. And so I pull my shirt off, and I've got a, you know, I'm afraid he's going to go into shock and die, right? And so I have my, and I'm like putting this, you know, this compress on his head, and it's, you know, those head injuries, they bleed everywhere. And it was awful. Yeah. It's too much. It's too much.
I mean, it's such a pivotal game. I mean, you can do the research. I know that shit's still out there. You know? And it was the 10th inning. I mean, and it was just, and like I said, I hate when you think about it, you know, it's like, oh, you know, getting there and how it all worked out. It was Wade Boggs, right?
No, it was Bill Buckner.
Clemens?
Buckner and Clemens.
Buckner and Clemens.
Mookie Wilson, another Mookie. And Mookie Wilson hit a ball. And the Mets, not one of the balls the Mets hit was a line drive. They're all flares. If you go back and watch them, Kevin Mitchell hits one in the sixth game. Gary Carter hits one in the sixth game. Mookie Betts hits a ball, you know what? Yeah, but I mean, this, to be there in person and then to have the Mets fans who knew that you were with the Red Sox coming up and just screaming in your face, yeah. Right?
And I mean, if you're going to, like you said,
not in my face.
Lose, you don't want to lose in Mets game. The New York fans are not nice.
No, no, the East. No, not like Boston fans or any different. The East Coast.
Boston fans are cool.
No, they're not. Shut up. Don't even go there. They're idiots. They just have a different way of thinking. Man, bad the Sox. Like, oh, my God. No, yeah, you want to lose like that in the Midwest. Nice people at Kansas City, Minnesota, Milwaukee. Not in big city people. They act stupid. It was awful. I got a couple emails for you about PSDs. Mac, I listened to the podcast, so I'm sending this to you, hoping that the Gunner will answer this, and I can listen to it tomorrow. You guys were talking about PSD for VIPs, generals, ambassadors, things like that yesterday. Mike was relaying his experience as somebody who served or led one. I wasn't exactly sure. Where do the Marines that do that come from, or the soldiers that do that, if they do that? I've heard the term. I'm not that familiar with exactly how those guys are chosen. Mike, explain.
The group that I fell in on, they were already there. They were everybody from regiment. So they were support guys. They were truck drivers. They were mechanics. They were refrigerator, technicians, engineers, comm guys, intel guys. Not one of them. I think maybe we had a couple, but not really combat guys. Not machine gunners. Not infantry guys. Yeah, actually, we did have a couple. They got from a battalion. But everybody else was basically your support guys. And then now you have to train them. But I will tell you this, not once, not ever again did I have a more cohesive unit that these guys, and the capabilities were endless. You know, now you have mechanics on every vehicle. You have professional drivers. You know, these guys have been driving. They know what's going on. They know what the vehicle can handle. We had everything. I mean, nothing could break. These guys were just, you know, they were smart kids. They figured things out. They could solve problems. Fighting was easy. You know, getting into a scrap, you get out, you shoot people, and get back in the vehicle. And you're like, that was easy.
The PSD part, you in 2004, Mike, he mentioned him yesterday. Colonel's name is Jerry Durant. Jerry Durant made such an impact on even General Petraeus when he went to meet him. He was a radio operator in Vietnam. He is about as down to earth and as plain spoken as you can be, right? Mm-hmm. And he very quickly, Mike and I talk about adults in the room. When Jerry Durant talks, you're like, who's that guy? Oh, that's Jerry Durant. But Mike was, you know, he went around and Jerry's job was to go around and to develop the Iraqi security forces at the time, and they had a bunch of them. It was a mess, and his job was to try to make sense of it. So you guys on a daily basis are out visiting everybody that has anything to do with that, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Everybody. Like, they went where other people didn't go. They visited people that other people didn't visit. Like, you know, yeah, we're going to meet so-and-so on a firm base. Mike and I would go, Mike and his guys, and Colonel Durant would go meet that guy at his place. And interesting. And then the other email about it was, when you meet with another VIP, is everybody security in the room? Does everybody, or does somebody take precedent? When you get together, how does that work? Mike, are there rules for that?
Say that again. If
when you meet other VIPs, right, they all have security people. Does everybody bring their security people into the room? Is one person in charge of it? How does that work?
It's the senior guy. I didn't have to do that much because, and those guys, you know, and I'm speaking from my experience, so don't get all upset if I call somebody out that you know, or, you know, but the more senior group that we ran into, the more idiots they were. I mean, they just, you know, it was just all over the place. They were just very unorganized, and you just felt like I was always telling my guys, we don't want to be here. We want to get out of here because I'm not worried about the bad guys shooting us. I'm worried about these idiots shooting us because they were Keystone Cops, man. They were idiots.
They were gunslingers. I'll tell you, here's a funny.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a funny.
The more they tried to look like gunslingers, the more idiot than they were.
I can't remember if it was General Petraeus. I can't remember who it was. It was somebody like that. Could have been Ambassador Bremer. They're flying out to Ramadi. And Ramadi, it was like on in Ramadi. It was like Thunderdome. So we're out there, and so the helicopter's inbound. So General Mattis comes by and says, Matt, come on, let's go. So we go out to the LZ, and we're standing there, and he's going to greet him, right? Dirt flying everywhere, right? And these guys come. They're like, now, we're at a firm base called Blue Diamond, right? Relatively small, up against the Euphrates River, right? Walled compound and then the river. And so they come up. The security guys, they come running off the helicopters, like pointing their rifles. Like they're like securing an LZ. And like, mm-hmm. So they go running past General Mattis, and I'm standing there, like shielding our eyes. They go running past us, and he looks at me, and he smiles, and he shakes his head. And they were like, it was like going to be on, like inside of our firm base. And so then, you know, he met whoever it was, the ambassador, whatever. We walk inside, and then I take his security guys, and I'm like, hi, guys, you can get something to eat there. And they're like, yeah, got it. And they're like, we've been preparing for this for a couple of days. And I said, really? And the guy was like, yeah, you know, Ramadi, it's like, you know, we've read a bunch about what's been going on out here. I'm like, yeah, that's like out there, though, you know. You're okay in here. This is us. They're like, yeah, we got it. They were Army guys, too. I'm like, all right. All right, boys, right there. It was.
Yeah, they were. I just stayed away from this guy.
It was. Here's one more email this morning, right now. What kind of weapons do PSD guys, are they the same stock weapons that Marines would carry, or do they have a choice?
No, same guns.
Same guns.
Everything's same. Same.
All right. And again, this is in the news because yesterday at a meeting, evidently they were moving from the meeting to helicopters that were parked on a tarmac when this happened. So they weren't inside of a building. They were,
right.
So there was obviously a little bit more access to it. But nonetheless, when a lieutenant general, Afghan type, is cut down, is killed, the provincial governor was actually wounded, and the head of the intelligence for the province is killed, that's a pretty big deal. So anyway, that in the news.
Yeah.
Whatever. One more.
Hey, I sent you a picture.
Of what?
On your phone of a gun.
On my phone of a gun. So not Skype, text?
Text.
Mike Musselman picture. Here's a picture. The last picture I got is your legs not being crossed. All right. This one is. What is that?
Hold there on. Should be a picture in there. I just sent you. Went through.
Stand by.
Attachment. One picture. Yeah, it's on there.
Oh, we were just talking about. I just saw that stock. That's the Magpul stock, yes?
That's a PRS, yeah.
What is it?
Rifle stock.
Is this yours?
No, I just built that.
When?
Yesterday.
But it's not yours?
No.
You built it for somebody else?
Yeah, look right on the magazine wall. That's a laser etched, engraved brand.
I was going to say
a registered brand.
Who'd you make it for?
Ron, the judge.
The judge, Ron.
So that's a 224 Valkyrie. So that's, even though it looks like a 5.56, an AR, it's a 224 Valkyrie.
It looks like
everything on it.
The lower receiver. So everything on it is custom. What has to be custom? The barrel, yes. Anything else?
Barrel, well, everything. If you look sharp from the front, let's go to the front.
Right.
So you look at the brake, the right. muzzle brake.
Yes.
That's a custom that matches the barrel. It's bead blasted. But it's a different brake. It's a precision brake, so it's better performing. Barrels
are hold on. What is that? When you say better performing, what do you mean?
Felt recoil. So the way the brake dissipates the gas,
yes.
you want it, so it kind of takes away some of the recoil of the gun.
Got it. Right.
The barrel is a 1-7 twist. Chromium lined barrel, and it's a 220 chambered 224 Valkyrie. It's 20 okay. inches long.
Hold on. Let's go back to the twist of the barrel. What is standard, you know, M4, M16 twist?
Standard, there is no standard. You can find them anywhere from 1 to 6 to 1 to 12, anywhere in between.
All right. And more twist means?
So the lower of the ratio is the more a bullet is being twisted. Or it's, you know, so it, one complete twist every 7 inches of the barrel.
Got it. That's
a little travel.
One, is
one revolution every 7 inches. So this is a 20-inch barrel, so it's almost doing 3 revolutions.
Got it. All right. And so more revolutions is better, yes? Tighter spin?
No? Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the weight of the bullet. I mean, if you over-stabilize a light bullet, the bullet can rip apart. It could, because, you know, as it travels down the barrel, of course, it's meeting friction. It's getting very hot. All it is lead behind that copper. And so if it's a small, light bullet, it can literally break apart.
Got it.
So then it's a fluted barrel.
So again, so why 224? One millimeter.
Okay, well, I will get there. I will wrap that up. Carbon fiber handguards. Those handguards only weigh 4 ounces, dude.
They look cool, too. Why the silver, why the chrome or silver barrel?
It's
what's that?
It's a brush. About? Yeah, that brush steel look.
Because
it's contrasting. It looks nice.
Right.
Remember, this is going to be a precision rifle. It's right. for shooting. It's going to be bench shooting or low infrared. It's going to be shooting pretty far.
Got it. All right.
Made the handguards made here in Texas because there's a little Texas star.
Exactly. Got to have them.
The only thing I used of his old gun was that lower. That's a Colt match grade lower. It used to be part of a whole gun. I just stripped it all apart. So then I had that. That's his brand. That's his registered brand here off of his ranch, the Apostrophe R Ranch. So that's laser engraved into the aluminum. Got a phosphate coated bolt. You can't see it in there.
Yeah.
They don't allow when you get them like that, the junk doesn't stick to them. They're kind of easier to clean.
Nice. We love that.
Yeah, so, and then a Geissele match two-stage trigger, custom build, and then that PRS precision rifle stock with the adjustable length and comb. And then he's going to put a Vortex scope on there. I don't know which one he's going to get yet, but yeah, so I just finished building that yesterday. And so we'll see how it shoots. Pretty sure it's going to be just fine. But it's a sweet gun. It's super light. I mean, it just weighs, the whole thing, the way it is, just at 4 pounds.
The, okay, 4 pounds. What's an M4 weigh?
About 7.
What's an M16 weigh?
About 7 and 8.
What are we up to, 8.4 now?
Yeah, those things are heavy, dude. 8, 9 pounds.
Let's talk about that. The M16 got heavier. Explain the A4.
Well, it started out.
Go ahead.
Like, you know, when the first one first came out, the M16, you know, it came out light. Yeah. So you're again standard M16, 7 pounds, 7 to 8 pounds, unloaded, of course. Once you load it, you got to add about a pound or more. 30-round magazine. M4, usually you can get them down to about 6, but they're roughly about 7 pounds, too.
Okay. I talk about as the M16 evolved, why did it get heavier?
Because we put more shit on it.
Like?
Modular, the metals became thicker, the barrel became thicker.
Stock became thick. Well, I don't know. It was different
the stock
material.
Pretty much remained the same. The original one was probably lighter.
Yeah.
But with the materials and everything else, it just became a little bit heavier.
Right. It used to chip and you know, it's funny. I interviewed a guy named Jack Riley, squad leader in Vietnam, and he said his first handguards were stamped with Mattel trademark on it. I said,
"Oh yeah."
I said, "Bullshit." He said, "Mac, he's from Alabama." Mac, I swore to God. He said that thing. He said, "And we've got the first batch. We turned in our M14s, which was the best service rifle ever made, and we got that piece of garbage, and with no forward assist on it, and Mattel stamped on the handguard." He goes, "You want to know what we wanted to do with those things?" He's awesome, awesome guy. But he talked about the weight of the weapon and turning in his M14 to get an M16 and wasn't real happy about it. And they were fighting big battles then up by Contien and things like that, names that are, when you read about them, you're like, holy smokes.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow.
Yeah, they got a bad rap when they first came out.
Right. Well, you know, like most things, right? When most things, yeah. First iteration, we just went through what, last week or the week before, F-35, everything's down until they check this tube. That happens with every system that comes online after everybody starts using it, and now you start figuring out the bugs and you start fixing them.
Well, the whole, and then the M14, the knockdown power of the M14 vice the M16, you know, you'll die just the same with the M16, guys. It's not, it's about placement. It's where you put those rounds. You know, you die just as fast with an M4 than you would an M14.
We've had this. You know, that's probably your greatest contribution to most people's enlightenment about the whole stopping power.
Bigger's better.
Right. No, you know, and you know, the conversation I look back on, we were talking about, I want to say we were talking about the history of the 45, and we went back to, what was it, the 38? That it replaced.
Yeah, the 38 long.
Right. And us talking about if they had guys who were savvier in ballistics, right? I want to see if I can remember the conversation right. We would have never got the 45 because they would have evolved the ammunition of the 38, which was more than good enough for what it was for the requirement.
No, we wouldn't have got the 1911. We would have got semi-automatics had to come about.
Okay.
You know, you just can't, even if the first ones only held 7, you can make the argument of, okay, your revolver holds 6, I hold 7. One's better. You know? What margin of better are you talking about? You know? So that would be that argument. Once they came out with a smaller caliber on, and you could put 15, double the amount, then your argument's lost.
Right.
Your argument's completely gone. You can't You can't. I mean, so the only thing that's nice about when people argue revolvers still, the only thing they can really, really, truly argue is accuracy, because revolvers are more accurate. And
wait,
stoppages. A revolver
footnote that
never fails.
Okay, so a revolver more accurate? Why?
Well, because of the barrel length. Because of when you look at the frame of a pistol, you know, you can't put a 6-inch barrel on a freaking, you know, on a semi-automatic. The thing would be, it would be ridiculously long. You'd never put it in a holster. So it would be a practical gun. So the most barrels on those are anywhere from 3 to 4 inches. So you're sacrificing. So that would be a stub nose. Because think about it. Your breech is almost middle of a semi-automatic because of your striker fire system. Or it's 2/3 of the way down the barrel. So your breech, where everything takes place, is not in the very back. So you can't do that. Like a revolver, it's in the very back. So you got your cylinder, and then you got your barrel. Bullets in the very back. Hammer strikes the primer, bullet goes down range. So you can get more barrel. But when you're building semi-automatics, unless you can build, you can bring the breech back, then you can lengthen the barrel. Yeah, then you would say yes. But most of the pistols, revolvers, are more accurate than their counterparts.
Because it's
failures.
Because of barrel.
You can get failure to fire, but that would be the ammunition problem.
Right.
But the revolver hardly ever fails itself because it's got less moving parts and it's a very simplistic design.
And the longer barrel. Interesting. Makes sense. No, but your point that day was, because we were talking about how far ballistics have come.
Yeah, they really evolved.
And your point that day was, you know, you could have made the argument that back in the day, had we have had better ballistic research, we may have never even, we would have solved the problem of the 38 and us needing, we needed, you know, the whole issue of stopping power would have been an ammunition issue, not, you know.
Yeah, it would have been solved through ammunition, most things, yeah.
Right.
And training.
Right. Interesting. But that's not the way we did it. I think you've changed everybody's, you've educated everybody on the whole stopping power discussion. Because again, anybody who was a Marine has heard that discussion relative to the 45.
Yes.
We've
stopping
all heard
power.
It. Stopping
the fatality. Yeah, firepower.
No doubt.
Firepower only makes sense when you're talking about combined arms.
Whoa.
When you got artillery, air, direct, you know, indirect, and everything in combined arms is firepower. You can make an argument for firepower. You can't make an argument that I can provide more firepower for my handgun than you can. Shut up.
So it's aimed rounds. Aimed out. And that's why
it's placement. It's where you put them.
The other thing, we were just talking the other day, and what did you say? Oh, when we were talking about it's hard to talk weapons with guys who have never seen a weapon like the M27, because you are, in fact, if I could quote you, you said, oh, you want to talk suppressive fire? Well, you're going to talk about dirt flying up in front of somebody's position. I'm going
to
talk about...
That causes you to, you know...
Keep your head down. How about if I suppress them by shooting them in the head? What?
Well, that was our argument. We talked to those guys and we said, what is suppressive fire? And they said, describe to me suppressive fire. What causes the enemy to be suppressed? And they said, well... It's the combination of the rounds snapping over their head. And I said, okay, I'll give that to you. But a smart person knows when they hear that sonic crack, guess where the bullet's at? It's already in the freaking ground. Okay? It's past you.
It will get your attention.
So if you hear a crack, it means you're still alive.
It will get your attention, though.
Yeah, it will get your attention. But it means if you knew what you're talking about, it meant that that round's already buried in the ground and cooled off.
Right.
Okay, so but the dirt flying though, the look, the sound of the, you know, the bullets impacting in the ground, the chipping of the concrete, because that gets your attention. I've had that happen to me, you know, like pachow, pachow, and you're like, whoa, okay, someone obviously sees me, okay, but and then they're talking about this depression. I said, okay, now what we're going to talk about is what if I put a bullet in your head? Would you agree with me that I think you're effectively suppressed just like you're talking about? And they're like, well, yes, you know, they're trying to get their head around this. You know, because for their whole career, they've been just talking about, suppressed, give me suppression, bam, bam. Okay, they're all suppressed. No, give me some more. At what? They're dead.
Huh? Whoa.
How can they be dead? They're supposed to be suppressed. You failed. You didn't suppress them. You killed them.
Oops. My bad.
Isn't death is an effective suppression? Yes.
Yes.
No.
Hello.
Yeah. That was the argument, man. And that's the argument we had with a lot of Marines when it first started coming out. And, you know, you look at this because, you know, you're a smart guy. You can figure it out. But, you know, think about if we would have had the M27 when you were a first lieutenant. Imagine that argument, dude. Those guys would have burned them at the stake. You know, can't. This is heresy. This is heretic. This gun's witchcraft. We can't have this. Oh, dude, it was. Oh, I mean, having that argument, and we'd sit there and look at us like, are we the stupid ones in this room?
Who's the truly stupid one here?
Yeah. I'm like, wait a second. And I said this one time, and I was, you know, a bunch of captains and majors and stuff. We were at Quantico, and I said, I looked, and they're like, what's wrong, Gunner? And I said, I'm trying to think, like, am I the stupid one?
Who's the stupid one?
And, you know, they're like, oh, very funny.
That's important, okay. Though. It's important to identify who's stupid in a discussion. Because if you are the stupid one, you need to know that. Yeah, so you can correct yourself. Wait a minute. Did I just get stupid? What just happened?
Yeah. Whoa, okay. Whoa. You just fed me the stupid pill.
Whoa. And you know what? But you'll find, I think most of us find that that's where learning actually occurs. When somebody stands up and says, okay, hold on. I don't understand what you're talking about, okay? And I may be the only one in the room, but could you slow down and could you explain that again? And then when you walk out for the break, you have like 7 people walk up to you and go, I didn't understand what he was saying. I had no idea what he was saying either, but I was embarrassed. I didn't want to say anything. So, all right, boys, no problem. Good to see we have a lot of moral courage here. If we can't do it over this kind of stupid shit, then how in God's name are we ever going to do it over something significant?
Yep.
Answer?
No, you're right.
We probably won't. But
no,
that's the way it
definitely
is.
Definitely won't. Yep.
That's the way it is. The just for everybody's own viewing pleasure, I just put a copy of on the read board of the gun Mike built. So I put that picture up since we were talking about it.
Yeah, it's not completely. I mean, the gun is shootable, but I mean, we got to still mount the scope. Get the bipods.
Yeah, but you can take a look at it. You can see it's up there right now. So if you go to the read board on the website, you click on, what does it say there? Ron's Gun, Gun Talk, Ron's Gun. If you just click on that, you'll see, you can go and see a larger image of it. But you can see what Mike's talking about. So there you have it. You can actually, what I would suggest is you copy and paste it. Into like something that you can blow up even more.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, boom, and you can check out. You can see the detail of the muzzle brake, right? You can see the star on the handguards, so you can see it all. And I'll tell you what, the modular pieces of the stock are still pretty crazy. When you look at all the different adjustments that you can make to make sure that you have the same eye relief every time, it is crazy.
And if you want a rifle built, contact me.
Yeah, you can. Do you have whatever happened to your website that you were building? Did you get that done?
It's still there. I just haven't done much with it.
Yeah, I'm getting
but that stuff's not on there. I mean that.
It should be. Gunner's Custom Guns.
I know it should be. It's not.
Let me tell you.
It should be a lot of.
Whenever somebody says, "Hey, you should put up a website with," most people do not realize how much work goes into putting up websites.
Oh, and, I know, dude.
And if you want
it's
the
like every day.
Yeah, if you want the content to be right and you want it to look right and be current, you become a slave to your website. Yeah. And so, actually, I'm getting ready to launch another one. It's entitled Post Traumatic Winning. I got an email this morning, Mike, from somebody who you introduced to the program and said, I'll read you, this is a little bit of a Grinch moment. And you should share in it. So I will share this with you. And it talks about news sources, and then goes on to say this at the end. And post-traumatic winning is now always on my mind. I am always looking for it in my life and the lives of those around me. Awesomeness. You know, and so that's going to get turned into its own website, posttraumaticwinning.com. Because, and the reason why, is all Marine radio might be intimidating for some people. And the things that we have to say about trauma that we have learned over a lifetime of dealing with it and helping others with it, there should be no barriers to it. So anyway, so that's coming to market as we speak. So anyway, I'm fired up about it. So yeah, so cool. Cool stuff. What else? What else do you have on your mind? What else? Do you have anything going on this weekend? You're going to teach again tomorrow?
No. Just been raining.
You like rain, though. You like the cold weather. You like rain. It's
yeah, I do. It's fall. It's just gloomy out. Gloom. I don't like the gloom this long.
What's the best shooting weather?
Like right now.
Is it? Overcast?
Yeah.
A little cool?
Overcast, slight drizzle.
Does the air get thicker? Yes. Is that good? Bad?
Yeah, the air is thicker. But it's manageable. I mean, it's all manageable. But it's fun. I like shooting in this weather. It feels like fall. Smells like fall. It is fall.
It is fall.
Yeah.
Baseball playoffs are on. Another email. Wind. That's the title of the email. Mac, I'd be curious the gunner's basic advice for shooting in the wind. What does he do? How do you do
it?
Is it simply an experience thing?
Yes. Don't is my experience. If you don't have to, don't. And then always shoot with the wind in your face or to your back. So you got no offset. You never want to shoot with the wind perpendicular, you know, 90 degrees left and right. That is not a good favorable wind.
Okay.
It will not work out in your back.
So let's talk about that. If you have to shoot with the wind, crosswinds.
Yeah.
How do you do it? How do you do it?
Well, that's something I can't, you can't, we're not going to cover not even in a day, but what you do is you shoot a lot. I mean, seriously. I mean, I don't mean to be a jerk about it, but you got to shoot a lot. You got to understand the ballistics, what the gun is going to do, what the wind. Look at what wind does. You know, so when I look downrange, I'm looking through my scope, and that's why I got really nice scopes that can look really far, even though I don't need to, but I need to see the wind. I'm looking for the blades of grass. I'm looking for the leaves. I'm looking for, and if it's a nice warm day, I can see the mirage, the actual heat coming up off the ground, right?
Right.
And then the mirage waves, if it's going straight up without any interference, no wind. If it's blowing, you know, all the way over, then the mirage ain't going to help me. I'm looking for blades of grass. And I know, so I now got to know, like, that blade of grass is, you know, it's more susceptible to wind or at least because it's sturdy. I mean, you got to know what you're looking at. You just can't see blades of grass go 15 miles an hour, you know, coming from the southwest. And because maybe that wind or that grass, you know, is stronger than normal and it's actually 25 or it's lighter than normal. It's like hay or alfalfa and then just the slightest breeze will make it look like it's bending over. So you got to look at things. And then it's depending on your shot.
Hey, let me ask you, so do you do that survey? Let's just say you're shooting at 700 yards. All right, just
yeah, I'll look mid-range. And then you look halfway down, and then all the way to my target.
Got it, got it. And then
that's where it's going to affect the bullet the most. Right? That's right. Where it affects the bullet the most.
Explain.
As the round releases energy and it slows down, it's going to be more susceptible to
got
the
it.
Environment.
All right, so the initial...
Think about it. Bullet's got a lot of competing factors against it. It's got drag. It's got gravity. It's got friction. And remember, and it's spinning to the right constantly, so it's releasing energy constantly. It's never, so you have to compensate for all that. So if you got wind, crosswinds, headwinds, downwind, whatever, barometric pressure, humidity, if you're shooting at altitude, it's less dense, so density altitude comes into play more. So those type of things play out a lot. Humidity, dew point, when it's wet outside, when it's humid outside, the air is thicker. There's going to be more friction.
Then the adjustments are based on
experience.
Experience. Got it.
And I can't, I've been doing it for so long. Well, and like I said, then I use a nice scope. I usually use like a Tremor or a Horus reticle. So that way, if I miss, I'm not missing by much. I'm a couple inches here and there, but I'm holding. So the key is, boom, shot goes off, recoil, get back on target as fast as possible. Put those crosshairs exactly where my shot was pulled. Okay, so you have to be disciplined at that. If you knew that your shot was pulled low left, put the crosshairs low left. Don't hold them back on center because that's not where the round broke. The round broke low left. So I'll put the crosshairs where I broke the round.
Right.
So, and I hold that breath again because I'm looking for impact. And so when it's short, bam, it's maybe 2 inches low. All I got to do then is reacquire where that impact was in my sight. That's my point of aim now. That's my point of reference, my point of impact. That becomes my crosshair. And I put that back on center target and pull the second shot. Bam. So if it's a bolt action gun, boom, as soon as that goes, I rack the bolt. And before the round even hits there, boom, 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 bolt rack, my eyes back in the sight. So when I shoot a bolt gun, I shoot it I don't shoot it conventionally. So most people that you shoot a bolt gun, you shoot it with you're shooting right-handed.
Right.
You shoot it with your right hand, bam, you take your right hand off the trigger, and you wrap the bolt. Boom,
right.
Boom, boom.
Right.
What I do is I cut my left arm around, so I'm cradling it. And so when I shoot, my left hand, my left thumb, my trigger, my finger's still on trigger, my left thumb and my left hand now wrap the bolt. And they wrap the bolt, my eye stays in the sight. So I never move. Nothing's coming off. My hand's never coming off the gun. My left hand is actually manipulating the bolt. My eyes still staying in sight.
Okay, hold on. So let me ask you this. The gun you're describing, is it made for somebody who's left-handed? How do you get your hand? How do you not pull your head off the reticle, off the stock, and do you reach over? How do you do that?
I told you, I just cradle it.
You cradle it. Got it. Okay.
So I take my left arm out. And then I bring it back to my body. I touch my fingers to my right shoulder blade. So you're making a V. So I'm making a V in the gun.
Got it.
So, well, it's not a complete V, but my left arm is manipulating the bolt.
Got it.
My left hand. My right hand, my trigger finger, never comes off the trigger, ever. And my eye never comes out of the sight. And so if you're listening and you're a shooter and you're trying to play this out, you're like, what the heck is he talking about? You got to try. But that's how I shoot wind. I'll shoot long distance like that. And then you do it all the time. So you shoot all the time. You're looking at things. But you got to know what you're looking at. And then you got to know what the bullet does at that rate and how much of it affects it, right? I mean, in I have a calculator. I have a ballistic calculator that it, you know, it goes in my phone and I put – it already has all this information. So if I look downrange and I see that the wind is a crosswind, and I have to, right? Let's say I have to.
Right, right.
It's a full value, meaning it's 90 degrees, right? And the more it angles off, you take – it would be, you know, full value, three-quarters value, half, quarter value, depending on the angle of the wind.
Right.
So if it's perpendicular, 90 degrees for me, it's full value, meaning that it should be a full effect. I got to know what my bullet's got to do. I put that all the information in there. And it'll give me, because it does the calculations on a computer, it gives me a somewhere to start from. So it'll tell me, maybe like, 25 clicks right. I don't like to click my scope. I don't like to take my hats, my turrets, and move them. I will occasionally, but I don't, because of my scope, I have references built into it. I'll hold that. I know what 25 clicks looks like. You know, it's 4 minutes. It's 4 inches at 100. I'm shooting at, you know, let's say I'm shooting at 500 yards. It's 20 inches. I'm going to hold 20 inches to the right. Pull my shot, and usually I'm holding 20 inches to the right, I'm looking at it, and there's some kind of little thing in my head that goes, I'd hold 22.5. And I kind of move over 2.5 inches, and then pull there. And I usually get closer. That little bird in my head that speaks to me is pretty smart. Because it's experience.
Right.
This is what I'm seeing. I know the computer's telling me this. I'm just going to go a little bit more. Yeah. That's the experience.
You know, it's interesting. People talk about things that are intuitive. You know, and I have my own feeling about what intuition is, experience. And it's so much experience that you can shortcut. And the example I always used is playing tic-tac-toe, right? You can look at tic-tac-toe because you played it so much. Right, and you could go there immediately.
Yeah, play it out.
Exactly. But it takes, you know, when you start out as a little kid playing it, you don't know where to make the move. You don't. You keep losing to somebody, and then you then it's experience. And so, I mean, any endeavor that you want to become intuitive, you have to be able to devote yourself to it so that you have the skills. I've got an email that kind of it plays into this. Mac, I'm curious, did Gunner grow up as a gun dork? Was his dad a gun dork?
No, not at all.
When did you gravitate towards the technical side of shooting and shooting and all of this?
Well, it was before that. So the technical side came in boot camp.
Really?
Luck, Mr. Luck again, I know what you're going to say, but so in boot camp, the enlisted guys have to do, now I don't know about the officers, because theirs is, you know, silverware and, you know, that kind of stuff. So in boot camp, you had to do mess and maintenance week. So during one port, you do maintenance. And so like a week, all you're doing is mowing grass, cutting, painting, whatever. It's just maintenance. It's free labor. And they put that in there as part of the training thing. But it's good for the Marine Corps or the MCRD because got slave labor all over camp now. You're right. Cutting the general's lawn, you're cutting everybody's lawn, you're weeding, you're painting, you're doing all cleaning windows. So you have, in essence, you know, 1,000 recruits a day cleaning for a week, every week. It's fabulous. You know, what a great, you guys need to understand. So most of the guys go to mess. So they work in the mess hall.
Right.
And the chow hall. And they're cleaning pots, or they're serving food, but they're just, again, cheap labor.
Right.
Because we were up at, you finish your field training week where you're out with the field, you're doing all your live fire, we're up there, and we had to do mess and maintenance up there. So I get assigned to the pot shack, and as soon I was like the last guy to walk in there, and they said, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, we don't need you. And I'm like, woohoo! Always pays to be last. So I walk out, And then another drone striker sees me and says, you know, come here, idiot. And so I start walking over to him, and this chief warrant officer says, I need someone to help me in the armory. And so the guy looks at me and goes, idiot, go with him. So I walk over with this chief warrant officer. You know, he's an officer, and cool guy. He's an old guy, and I don't know who he is. So we walk in the armory there at SOI, you know, Camp Porno.
Right.
And that was my job. I had to report there. I was the only one working there from, you know, 7 in the morning till, you know, 5 at night. And then we go back to the squad bay, and then the drill instructor makes us bends and thrusts in the sand pit because, you know, we're skating all day. But for the whole week. And so he caught me. He was a nice guy. He was a chief warrant officer. I didn't know anything about him. But later I found out he's an ordnance officer. You know, that's what his job. He ran the armory there.
Right.
But he was just a nice guy. And he took time and he sat down and he showed me different things. And he taught me to take apart every gun that we had back then, all the way down to the pins and spurs. And so he'd take them down, and I'd put them back together. And then I'd take them down and put them back together. So I learned this. And then he'd talk about different things, because he was a shooter. You know, he's a competition shooter. He'd talk about ballistics. And he started me down that path of, you know, okay, understanding how the gun works. Now I've got a fundamental believing in how the gun works. Now I want to know. And so it was just me reading, going to different things. And I was always a math guy. I could figure this out. Angles and, you know, things. So I figured, to me, it was always just like, oh, wow, you know, cool. It was like solving a puzzle.
It is solving a math problem, right?
And then much later, I became a gunner. And then my gunner path took me to, again, working with the in the Quantico.
Mike, that's crazy that fate would have, you know what I mean? That chance, hey, we got enough. You, huh?
Yeah. Come here, idiot.
Come here, idiot. Right?
And I'm the only guy, you know, the only guy that works in the armory. And this guy he sets me on that path.
Right. Wow. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Lucky, lucky, lucky.
All right, interesting. Interesting stuff. So what are you doing this weekend? Anything exciting?
No. let's see.
Nothing?
No.
You'll get a chance to rest up. No, the World Series won't start till next week, so you'll get a chance to rest up. Your stomach will get a few nights off, so that's good. Get healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
You'll be full up round for the World Series, so that's good.
No, other than that, the only thing coming up is, that's about it, man. Halloween.
Here's another email. One more question, I'll let you go. Mac,
yeah.
What weapon is Gunner manipulating as he talks?
Oh, no weapon. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. It sounds like
I just closed my eyes and I talked through it.
It sounds like you were cycling a.
No, what I was doing is I closed my eyes.
A bolt.
And put myself in that situation, and I'm doing that.
Oh, really? And then that's the sound. It actually gets emitted when you're just thinking about.
Yeah. So I closed my eyes and I'm like, okay, my left arm's right here, and it's like racking the bolt.
And the sound happens. That's pretty amazing. That's. I mean, you are a gunner. You emit sound. That's pretty amazing.
It's conditioning, man. I mean, it's like you're always doing it with your head.
Love that. All right. Well, congratulations. Have a good weekend.
All right, man. Talk to
you. There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. Isn't that crazy how fate? I got enough. You stop. Huh? But I'm supposed to be with them. No. We don't need you. And then the dude comes out of the corner, or however it works out, and says, hey, I need a guy in the armory. Hey, you, go with him. And it opens a door that changes your life. Amazing how life is. So crazy. I'd never heard that story, how he actually got into that. But that'll do it on a Friday. All Marine Radio. If you don't know what post-traumatic winning is, somebody sent me an email. Hold on, let me find it. Mac, do you have a spot where people can go for post-traumatic winning? Yes, of course. Come on. Go to the website. Across the top, heading, you'll see post-traumatic winning. What? Yeah, you can click on that. Right, and you can scroll down and you can see there's podcasts. There's a link there. And there's some stuff that you should read about. Picture of me and my daughters. Yeah, Colleen and Catherine. And then across the top, if you just have your mouse hover over the link that says post-traumatic winning, there's a link that takes you to post-traumatic winning broadcast. There's a blog on there that I put stuff in, and there's also a read board that I put stuff on. So if you're interested in touching somebody's life for the good, get smart about trauma. Become the Grinch. And you can have moments like I had this morning at 5:58 when somebody sends me an email that says this, and post-traumatic winning is now always on my mind. I'm always looking for it in my life and the lives of those around me. Awesomeness. And what he's looking for is sharing the knowledge that he has to ease somebody's pain, to let them know that they can do it, to let them know that they can still live the life they wanted to live in spite of whatever traumatic experience darkened their doorstep. So, yeah, just go to the website. You'll see when you see the links, just click on post-traumatic winning. Hover your mouse over that, and you'll see all that stuff. So, yeah. So, and as I put it up, for instance, the interview with Jack Riley that I did this week is on there. The one before that is called Post-Traumatic Winning Wednesday. Thoughts on the door to a greater life that opens when trauma darkens your doorstep. And then dot, 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 period, 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 space. Oh, and by the way, period, 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 space. You can't see that door at first. That's why it helps to have a post-traumatic, a mentor that can tell you that as dark as that room looks, there's another door on the side, maybe in the back. Okay? And it's a door that opens to a greater life. You won't get over what's happened to you, but you can use that to be greater, to help other people, to touch their lives. And there's a picture in there of somebody sticking their hand out. I love that picture. Then there's the next interview. There is some cool stuff on that website. It's the interview I did with Libby Wilkie. So it's a mother's perspective of her son struggled with PTSD. That's in there. There's an interview I did with Bob Nielsen. Bob, a Vietnam veteran himself. Him talking about why he's gone for 17 years to Walter Reed and Bethesda Naval Hospital in the Washington, D.C. area, right? Bob Nielsen was post-traumatic winning before I even coined the term. So, all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah, that you can get smart on. So, anyway, have a great weekend. We will see you on Monday. And if you're just tuning in, a little bit bothered by the events in Afghanistan. So we'll talk about that in the first hour. We also talk about Snapchat and my course correction relative to my daughter, Colleen. So it was funny. Patrick left yesterday. And I was talking right before I went on the air. He left to go to work. And we were talking about Snapchat. And then he comes home And he had gotten a request from his sister, right? To, like, I don't, to follow him or something like that, or connect. And he walks in the door and goes, what the hell happened? I said, well, I think I evolved the decision. So we talked about Snapchat. And then check out the news of the day and talk a little bit about Afghanistan being bothersome. Waiting, hopefully, for the Secretary of Defense or the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to say something. Make me feel good about Afghanistan, because I'm not feeling good about it. So you hear that. Then you'll hear the Allmarine Radio head chef joins us today, as he does every Friday. And if you want to get hungry right before lunch, 10:13 on the West Coast, so lunch is coming up in an hour and 47 minutes, if you're timing it. Right. So if it's on the East Coast, you're just concluding lunch, so I hope you had a nice lunch. If you're in the Midwest, you're just getting ready to go. So anyway, but the Allmarine Radio head chef talks about the Midwest green bean dish with tater tots on top. You know that tastes good. Right? Yeah. And then we also talk about he gives his roast caraway duck recipe that he's famous for. So you'll hear that. And then the Gunner talks about we talk a little bit about the Red Sox but they're advancing to the World Series, which Gunner is very excited about. And then we do some gun talk. So, yeah. So, have a great weekend on a Friday. Allmarine Radio, over and out.